Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
I began a little subdivision type of study within my major study of liberalism. I termed it the Ghosts of Liberalism Past, Present, and Future. And we've been looking at the ghosts of liberalism present, most recently. And in our last podcast last week, we looked at some of the movers and the shakers of so-called progressive Christianity, which I'm labeling, as I say, part of the ghost of liberalism present. I wanted to, I gave you a list of some of the more prominent, what are known as progressive Christians. Now, I have a document here, which is from the Center for Progressive Christianity, and it gives a little more information about this particular group of progressive Christians. It says, about us, mission. It says, the mission of the Center for Progressive Christianity is to reach out to those for whom organized religion has proved ineffectual, irrelevant, or repressive, as well as to those who have given up on or are unacquainted with it, to uphold evangelism as an agent of justice and peace, to give a strong voice both in the churches and the public arena to the advocates of progressive Christianity, and then to support those who embrace the search, not certainty. So they're not really, they're still searching, unfortunately. Sort of like U2, I guess, that rock band. Still not found what they're looking for. But anyway, currently it says, we are working to fulfill our mission by creating open and welcoming communities of faith. We are developing strategies for evangelism that do not assume the absolute superiority of Christianity so that we do not contribute to the world's tragic divisions. In other words, we do not believe that Jesus is the only way, even though he said he was the way, the truth, and the life, that no one can come to the Father but by him. We're not going to go there, is what they're really saying here. Building an international network of progressive Christians, we are working with independent networks in other countries to provide support for people, support for people, especially the isolated, who hold to the principles that we believe are central to the gospel. Being a constructive force for social and environmental justice and peace in the world, we are finding allies in the struggle to bring social and environmental justice and peace to all people, especially those who have been oppressed and powerless. Now, within this group of people, or at least within their leadership, there are a few names which you will recognize from last week's podcast, or at least a couple here, a few I should say. First on the list I have for you is Karen Armstrong. And of course I went into some detail last week in sharing actually how she, had been added to a list known as useful infidels, as opposed to the useful idiots of Marxism. She actually was considered by some to be a useful infidel by one of the Muslim groups working to help destroy our freedom here in the U.S. But anyway, she's a member of this progressive Christianity. She's a former Roman Catholic nun who teaches at Leo Baeck College for the Study of Judaism in London. And of course, you can listen to last week's podcast, because I went into quite a bit of conversation about her, because I quoted from her at other times as well. Marcus Borg, the distinguished professor of religion and culture at Oregon State University and president of the Association of Anglican Biblical Scholars, and I'll have more to say about him in a minute. And then two more. One, William Rankin, and I had wanted to include him in my Ghosts of Liberalism Future, because of some of his work. He's a member of this progressive group, of course, but He's president of the Global AIDS Interfaith Alliance. It says before joining Gaia, he was the vice president, which is that last, it's an acronym for what I just quoted there. He was the vice president of the United Religions Initiative. And of course, the United Religions Initiative, I went to great lengths speaking about this particular group and their involvement in trying to bring a one world religion into the world. And then, of course, John Shelby Spong, who I've referred to oftentimes, the retired bishop of the Episcopal Church's Diocese of Newark. It says that he now devotes his time to writing and lecturing. And, of course, that's to put it mildly. I mean, this guy's written a ton of books, done great harm to the faith, and is probably the equivalent of someone like Bishop Pike in our day. Still alive. In fact, I'll be quoting from his website a little bit later in the podcast. Now, getting back to Marcus Borg in another one of the, from the Center for Progressive Christianity, another one of their postings, event calendar, Marcus Borg's lecture schedule. It talks about him, and that I've already mentioned where he's a professor at Oregon State. I assume he's still there. He's written many books, including his widely known Meeting Jesus Again for the First Time and Reading the Bible Again for the First Time. He also, his most recent works, The Heart of Christianity, The Last Week, co-authored with John Dominic Crossan, as you may recall, another member of the famous or infamous, if you will, Jesus Seminar. Now, this is what Lighthouse Trails Research Ministry on their website has to say about Marcus Borg. This is a quote from him. Biblical literalism has become a major intellectual stumbling block for millions of people. Yes, I suppose it would be in his world. The following article from the Miami Herald is about New Age sympathizer and meditation promoting Marcus Borg. While Borg makes no apology or secret about his non-biblical views, his books are sold in Christian bookstores, and he is admired and promoted by popular Christians such as Brennan Manning, who has passed away, in Ragamuffin Gospel, and Brian McLaren, who, of course, is one of the leaders of the emerging church, or the emergent church. A radical spin on the life of Christ by Alexandra Alter. It says in that article in Miami Herald, it says, Marcus Borg, a professor of religion and culture at Oregon State University and renowned Jesus scholar, advocates a radical reinterpretation of the Christian faith. Well, duh. But one that rejects traditional views of Christ's virgin birth and resurrection. No secret there. Revising the popular understanding of these key Christian tenets is essential to the future of the church. And I might add, what church? What church are we talking about here? But anyway, says Borg, you know, he believes that these need to be revised. And he will speak about moving beyond biblical literalism during a three-day lecture series at Coral Gables Congregational Church. Now, this, of course, was some years ago. This was 2008. At least that's when this article that I have printed out here was from. Now, I'm going to be sharing, of course, I think I already mentioned in an earlier podcast, that I'll be sharing as I go along a little travelogue of my pilgrimage to several liberal sites. I mean, I've been to every kind of bizarre site you'd ever want to visit, but I've been to also many liberal churches and you know, liberal sites, for lack of a better term, I guess. And, you know, both what I call the ghost of liberal present and future sites. And really, I guess the distinction would be you'll just have to wait and see what I mean, really, by some would be more of the ghost of the liberalism present and then also liberalism future, based on what is promoted and how strongly certain things are promoted. Much of it all dovetails together, of course, in their similar heresies. Now, a few years ago, I visited one of these bizarre places that I've mentioned before, the headquarters of a major cult, Unity. It used to be called Unity School of Christianity in the Kansas City area. And by the way, one of my heroes, Dave Hunt, before he passed and went to be with the Lord, has also visited there at times. In fact, I remember hearing him say that before I ever made the trek. But I have visited there several times. And one time I found a book promoting progressive Christianity. Now, I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But actually, you know, that, by the way, Robert Schuller has also visited there. Years ago, in fact, as a guest speaker, who was tasked with bringing his church growth principles to help them grow their cult. At least that's how I would put it. And fortunately for me, and hopefully for you today, if we don't have any technical difficulties, I want to play a soundbite. Of course, you know, Robert Schuller has also passed away too. But I think this is all important in showing just how these heresies have penetrated into the church through people like Robert Schuller, who claim to be, of course, Orthodox Christians. Obviously, as I mentioned last week, he was a liberal who helped bring about the mega church growth principles that he passed on to some of the other mega church people. Again, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time with that because I've already gone over it. But anyway, I have the soundbite from that lecture that he was giving there. And before I try to get to it here, I'm going to just say that he spoke in glowing terms about their being the unity people, their positive approach, as opposed to the negative fundamentalist types that he had to deal with. Now, let's just see if we can play a little soundbite for you, and then I'm going to follow that up and read the transcript of the same basic soundbite in case it doesn't carry through as well as I would like. So let's see what happens here. Let's give it a spin.
Dr. Schuller, we hear a lot of talk these days about the New Age, the Age of Aquarius, the New Age type of thinking that we are involved in with holistic healing and various other things that are part of what is called the New Age. Will you describe the role of what you might consider the New Age minister in the 80s and beyond?
Well, I think it depends on where you're working. I believe that the responsibility in this age is to positivize religion. Now, this probably doesn't have much bearing to you people, being unity people, you're positive. But I talk a great deal to groups that are not positive. I talk a great deal to even to what we would call fundamentalists, who deal with constantly with sin, words like sin, salvation, repentance, guilt, that sort of a thing. So when I'm dealing with these people, I'm saying we have to learn what sin really is. Sin is any lack of faith or trust or negative thought that would block us from developing into our full potential to be the fully abundant lives that could, in truth, glorify God by creating a greater society. So I'm trying to positivize that word. A word like repentance. I say in classical Christianity, repentance has been so negatively interpreted as self-flagellation, self-condemnation, remorse, which is not what it means at all. It means to be positive and to turn to the light. So I think it means what we have to do is positivize the words that have classically only had a negative interpretation.
Thank you.
Okay, how about that? Pretty bad, huh? Hopefully that came through. I won't know until I replay the tape. But in case it didn't, let me just read, like I say, the transcript, or at least part of the transcript. And this came from a great ministry, Let Us Reason Ministries. But anyway, that's where the man who wrote this article actually was converted through Dave Hunt's ministry. And I got that tape you just listened to, also from Dave Hunt's ministry years and years ago. But anyway, it says he was asked, Schuller was, Dr. Schuller, we hear a lot of talk these days about the New Age, the Age of Aquarius, the type of New Age thinking that we're involved in with holistic healing and various other things that are part of what is called the New Age. Will you describe the role of what you might consider the New Age minister in the 80s and beyond? Schuller replied, well, I think it depends upon where you're working. I believe that the responsibility in this age is to positivize religion. Now, this probably doesn't have too much, doesn't have much bearing to you people. Being unity people, you're positive. But I talk a great deal to groups that are not positive, even to what we would call fundamentalists, who deal constantly with words like sin, salvation, repentance, guilt, you know, that sort of thing. So when I'm dealing with these people, what we have to do is positivize the words that have classically only had a negative interpretation. Well, now, as I've said many times, this is exactly what cults will always do. They will redefine theological terms, give them a whole new meaning, that which was not intended by the author, being God, to mean a completely different thing, and twist the scriptures to their own destruction. This is what Schuller the heretic was really noted for. But you know, what is Robert Schuller doing at Unity? Well, he just fit right in, didn't he? Look at a few other notes. This is from a friend of mine, Marcia Montenegro, had some notes about some of the neo-Gnostic cults like Unity and like Religious Science. And so I want to quote a few things from her and just make a point. Unity School of Christianity, 1889. Unity was started by Charles and Myrtle Fillmore. All can emulate Jesus and attain a Christ consciousness, they said. They believe in reincarnation, that we're all part of God, that thoughts make us ill. That Unity, which is headquartered in Kansas City, Missouri, or near there, published the metaphysical, still does, the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary. Now, this Bible Dictionary, of course, that's exactly what it was, a Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, which redefined biblical terms into their form of metaphysical belief, which, of course, was basically Gnosticism, or what we would call neo-Gnosticism. You could call it New Thought. You can call it mind science. Just don't call it home for dinner. Excuse my foolish humor. But just don't touch it with a 10-foot fork, because it is evil. It's straight from the pit of hell. Now, Religious Science, similarly, you know, I would say that, now, and I'm, this is my own quote, or it's my own speaking here, but the Unity School of Christianity, now that's one of their big means of redefining what the Bible would say. They use the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary. Now, the Religious Science, which was founded by Ernest Holmes, and which is also very popular with many of the Hollywood types, and of course, I will go into much more detail when we look at and do a study of New Thought religion and look at some of the people, you know, like Oprah and, you know, several others who are very comfortable with New Thought, New Age, Gnostic, Neo-Gnostic type false teaching. But anyway, this particular group in 1917 that was founded by Ernest Holmes, he claimed sin and evil do not exist. This is, again, a Gnostic kind of an idea. Jesus was a man who took on the Christ spirit. One can manipulate spiritual laws to be happy, Ernest Holmes believed. And Religious Science emphasizes techniques such as affirmations to access these laws. You've probably heard of positive affirmations, not to be confused with positive confession of the Word Faith movement, although probably not too different. Now, that's all I really want to say about that, except to say that I picked up a document when I visited the Religious Science headquarters in Los Angeles when I lived out there. I picked up a booklet called How to Speak Religious Science. And all this was, really, was another type of metaphysical dictionary redefining terms. It wasn't exactly the same as the other one, but it had the same effect. And I won't take a lot of time here. I'll just, here's, for instance, Christ, they say. What's the definition? Was Jesus the Christ? They say, oh, yes. And it's important to understand that Christ was not Jesus' last name. Well, that's true. But they say it's a title which acknowledges the fact that he fully understood and demonstrated his divine nature. It says the word Christ comes from the Greek word Christos, which means anointed or enlightened one. They say Christ is a universal idea, and each one puts on the Christ to the degree that he surrenders a limited sense of life to the divine realization of wholeness and unity with good spirit God. I guarantee you, of course, they do not believe that in Jesus the same way we do. Jesus the Christ, that is. Now, hell, I'll just a couple here I'll pick out. Hell, do we believe in a hell? Hell, just as heaven, is a state of mind, all based on our awareness or lack of awareness of the presence of God within us. And that's about all I'm going to say. I'm not going to waste too much more time with this because I'll go into greater detail when we do a larger study on New Thought heresy. But that just gives you an idea, okay, of what we're talking about here. Now, of positivizing words. That's what really the point that I'm trying to make. What was Robert Schuller doing at Unity? Well, he fit right in because he was doing the same thing that these cults were doing, redefining theological terms to positivize them, you know, for those poor fundamentalist cavemen who was running around and believing in things like sin and repentance and all those nasty terms that needed to be positivized by Brother Schuller. So anyway, forgive me, I crack myself up sometimes. Anyway, now, I mentioned a book that I found while I was there. Very interesting book. It was called A New Spiritual Home, Progressive Christianity at the Grassroots by a man named Hal Taussig. And this book was endorsed by some individuals. Marcus Borg, who I mentioned before, he said it's a remarkably informing, encouraging, and exciting description of an emerging progressive Christianity. John Shelby Spong said, here are the signs of a new religious hope in the increasingly barren religious landscape of America. And then James Rowe Adams, who you may never have heard of, he is the founder of the Center for Progressive Christianity, which I've quoted from their documents earlier. And he said, Hal Taussig has accomplished what no reporter or academic has attempted, the documentation of a trend toward new life in the church that cuts across all denominational lines. Now this book is very fascinating to me, very interesting. And here's some of the reasons why. This book, like I said, what was a book like this doing in a neo-Gnostic neo-Gnostic cult, a mind science cult bookstore? Well, you'll see some interesting points here on pages 117 through 119. You know, once I read these things, I realized what that book was doing there. This is under New Denominations, the chapter on New Denominations. It says, by and large, progressive Christianity has not found momentum in the formation of new denominations. Goes on to say, progressive Christianity has a tangential relationship to some new denominations. This relationship has taken two forms. Some churches within some new denominations have become progressive during the same period that much of progressive Christianity has emerged in older denominations. And at least two very small new Catholic denominations. We're not going to talk about those, but going on, it says, there are a good 10 denominations that have grown in the last 50 years into significant groupings of lively congregations across the country. Now, we're only going to look at two or three of them here. These denominations have mostly centered around charismatic founders. Three of these newer denominations have within them significant progressive developments in the past two decades. They are Unity, the Metropolitan Christian Church, and the Church of Religious Science. So I, of course, commented on Unity and Church of Religious Science. The Metropolitan Christian Church is a denomination that's based on homosexual Christianity, in the shortest way of putting it, I suppose. Anyway, it goes on to say, neither Unity nor the Church of Religious Science necessarily calls themselves Christians, but in their midst, astonishingly progressive expressions of Christian material have developed. And by the way, the Reorganized Church of Latter-day Saints, whatever their name is now, I forget. They also have become really what I would call a liberal Christian type denomination beyond being a splinter group from the Mormon cult. But we're not going to talk much about them here. Now, Unity, it says the Unity denomination has been underway as an alternative to conventional Christianity for more than 100 years. But it is only within the last 20 years that it has established a truly national presence. In contrast to other relatively esoteric spiritual movements of the past generation, it is focused on the establishment of churches. These churches have pastors, worship on Sundays, and formerly resemble other mainline churches. In Unity's basic teachings, there's much attention paid to Christian tradition and especially biblical material. Well, I might argue with that. But from the beginning, Unity has rejected Orthodox Christianity's claim to be the only true religion. There you go. As Unity has developed, it has attracted members from other mainline denominations. Combined with Unity's embrace of biblical material, its attempt to put such teachings in a new light, and its conventional church form, the presence of new members from explicitly Christian denominations has produced second and third generation congregations. Now, moving down to at this time, it might be nice for me to read from, this is from Bishop Spong's, The Emerging Church in Northern Michigan. This was from one of his websites, his Progressive Christianity website. Somebody asked the question, in the early 70s, my husband and I attended a Unity School of Christianity at the Unity Church in Little Rock, Arkansas. They seemed to be saying that the scriptures were to be interpreted metaphysically. Would you agree with that? He says, there is a wonderful Unity Church in Little Rock, and on two occasions I've had the privilege of lecturing there and have always enjoyed that contact. On both occasions, they had a female vocalist that I especially enjoyed. Unity does tend to read the scriptures metaphysically. That is a slippery word, but as they see it, it means first that they do not read the scriptures literally, and second, they see the scriptures pointing beyond its Jesus as God's divine rescue of this fallen creature that was achieved in the crucifixion, which theology I think of primarily as a guilt-producing violation of Christianity's deepest meaning. They emphasize human potential and human growth and seek to empower people to become all they can be. That is quite consistent, I believe, with the Christian message, especially as the more mystical Gospel of John understands it. So you see, the heretic Spong is very comfortable with this heresy of Unity. Now, with the short time I have left, back to the book on page 118, Church of Religious Science. Like Unity, the Church of Religious Science has, from its inception, rejected an exclusively Christian perspective. In other words, Christ is the only way to God. And like Unity, the CRS has used massive amounts of Christian tradition alongside esoteric teachings and material from other religions. And like many progressive congregations of the past 15 years, CRS has embraced expressiveness and artistic expression. Although their material is different from conventional Christianity, like Unity, they embrace the terminology of church and follow most of the cultural expectations of church. CRS worship services throb with spiritual energy, new music, and a complex blend of New Age philosophy, Christian tradition, and Eastern religious material. So the inclusion of CRS in this book has its presumptions in calling CRS a part of progressive Christianity. I'm going to have to stop here.